powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Happy Thursday. We have a shorter show today. As a reminder for you guys, we got some Mariners baseball coming up here in about 2 hours, so do not go anywhere. Stay glued to your radio, glued to your smart speaker, your smartphone, because we're going to have Jake and Stacy some fun interviews coming up here with Rick Riz at noon and then Mariners baseball.
Yeah.
You guys, Rick was fantastic.
Absolutely.
I love hearing Rick's. He laughed when I just, spoiler alert, we had to tape with him early because he's got to go take care of his job. And he laughed when I said that he was the legendary voice. But I am telling you guys, when I hear Rick's voice, my mind tells me automatically it's spring, it's summer, it's baseball. It's like you can't disassociate hearing the voice from like it's baseball time. Let's go. So you're going to get kind of like a prequel to the game when you hear Rick. He's got some great stuff to say about Evan White, how he's watching his development at the plate. Jared Kelnick, of course. Who else? Who else have we been talking about more than any other Mariner? But and I think just really, really excited to welcome fans.
And Stacey's got one.
I had a very
minor suggestion that you're not going to want to miss.
It's a very.
Just trust me on this.
I thought it was a very thoughtful, logical. Suggestion.
No, it was.
Just kind of like a, hey, hear me out kind of thing.
It was very good. It was very good.
I thought Rick liked it. Rick seemed open to it.
Yeah,
right, Curtis? He seemed open to it.
You kind of getting thrown under the bus.
Okay,
for it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
we'll just leave it as a tease and we'll let everybody else hear.
Speaking of the Mariners, we're also going to have some chances for you guys during our Open the Gates giveaway to enter to win a pair of opening night tickets to the Mariners game on Thursday, April 1st versus the Giants. And this is really kind of like the big, exciting part of it. In addition to just taking in some Mariners baseball for what's now a sold out game, you're also going to get a chance to open the gates to T-Mobile Park and welcome us all back to baseball. Your first chance during our show is going to happen at the bottom of the hour, but this contest is going to be going for a while on 710, I think, for at least the next day, for certainly tomorrow. So you're going to have a couple chances, but your next chance coming up here at 11:30, so do not go anywhere. Now, quickly, before we get to any of that, there was a tweet that I saw the other day, just for some quick Seahawks chatter for a minute here, Jake. There was a tweet I saw the other day from Michael Sean Dugar, and he is a reporter, Seahawks reporter for The Athletic. He was one of the three writers, in addition to Jason Jenks and Mike Sando, who put together that article about Russell Wilson and his relationship with Pete Carroll that everyone was talking about, including us. So he just the other day tweeted, Russ basically said his OL ain't good enough and he's tired of being hit. Seattle responded by, likely, rolling out 80% of the same OL. That's interesting. And he says, whether the line is better, I think it is. That's a telling rebuttal from Pete and John. Curious how Russ is feeling. So now when I hear that, I'm thinking, you know what? He's not wrong. Like, they are bringing back a lot of the same OL, and more recently re-signed Jordan
Simmons.
OL
as an offensive line.
Yes.
Right?
And more recently re-signed Jordan Simmons and Cedric Abuehi. And so most of the depth pieces coming back as well. You've got one new guy, Gabe Jackson. Was it enough?
Now, I believe that the situation is still TBD. It's still to be determined. I think that there's reason for optimism. Absolutely. I think there's reason for optimism as you look forward because Gabe Jackson, I believe, is that big of an upgrade on your interior. Whether he plays left guard or right guard, you've significantly upgraded that left guard position from Mike Iupati. Now, in 2019, I thought Mike Iupati brought, you know, a good contribution, but I think that Gabe Jackson, his potential, his ability are better than what Mike Iupati could bring to the table even in 2019, and certainly he will be better than what Mike Iupati was in 2020. And so that part of it I'm excited about because you look at the offensive line, just objectively, you have three potential pluses. And the way that I view pluses are guys that are above average to potentially elite. Okay. Dwayne Brown certainly is that. I think you've got Damian Lewis who has the ability to potentially be that above average to elite right guard or left guard, whatever he ends up playing, interior in this league. Gabe Jackson has shown that he is an elite guard in this league. And then you have Brandon Schell, who is definitely an upgrade from Jermaine Ifedi, but I would look at him as an average tackle, a right tackle in the league. And then Ethan Posick. As of right now, I wouldn't view him as a negative if they believe that he can improve in the second half of the season. So I think that that's still TBD. Maybe they look at the center position in the draft and they address that and they add competition for Ethan Posick. But I don't think that there's reason to necessarily be negative about the decision right now. And the reason for that being is one name that has not been brought up in this conversation, Stacey. When I've looked at it and seen, you know, the Twitterverse and just everybody else talking about the issue, is Shane Waldron. Shane Waldron is a massive part of the equation for this offensive line and for this group to potentially be better with its new scheme change and Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay. You know, one of the things that they are known for as an offensive scheme and a philosophy is doing a better job of making things easy on the offensive line. And so if that can truly be the case with what Shane Waldron's able to do here in Seattle, then I think that you do see everybody continue to keep improving. And someone like Ethan Posick, by the way, who is more physically talented than a guy like Austin Blythe. Austin Blythe is a player that was a good player. He was a seventh-round pick. Out of the past 3 years, he's had two really good years. But I wouldn't say he's more physically imposing than Ethan Posick or has better upside than Ethan Posick. And he did really well in their scheme. So I think there's reason for optimism there. But also, if Ethan Posick doesn't improve from the second half of the season last year and plays more to that than anything else, then I think you can look at that and go, was that a mistake? Maybe. Yeah, probably. But I think that that's why in this conversation, I don't think as of right now you can look at it and be upset or be angry, because Gabe Jackson will make a difference. Shane Waldron will make a difference. And I think that will be positive.
I'll start by pointing to one of your biggest points, which was that adding Gabe Jackson is no small move. It's one move, but no small move. Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times in Cut 2 says, in fact, it's the biggest move Seattle's made.
It's really the biggest move they've ever they've kind of made, probably ever, really, in terms of during the free agent season anyway. Obviously, you know, Dwayne Brown, I think people sometimes forget about that. And that was a trade for a really significant piece there. But, you know, this time of year anyway, I think fans have always been a little bit frustrated that maybe they haven't done more on the offensive line. And so they did do that there and did it with a trade or with a draft pick. And, you know, maybe they didn't want to have to do that, but I think they were probably wary at that point of if he went to free agency, the Raiders were maybe going to release him and obviously tried to swing a trade there and were able to do it. And if he hadn't, you know, if he'd gone to free agency, maybe the Seahawks are worried, you know, his price goes up.
Now, it's not just trading the draft capital, by the way, which was pretty hefty for Seattle because they had four picks, traded away one of them. Now they only have three. That's a lot to give up. Not only that, they trade away one of four draft picks that they have for the opportunity to then pay Gabe Jackson, what, $9.5, $9.8 million per year, which makes him one of their bigger salary cap hits. So
yes.
I think there's a conversation to be had that was a really important move, and one would hope that Russell Wilson saw it as a good enough move because they gave up quite a bit of draft capital in terms of the limits that they had and also are paying quite a bit of salary cap space to this person. That is an investment. That's not just we went out and got you someone that was like a backup struggling somewhere else. We went and got you someone that we had to give up something for, that we had to make a sacrifice to get in order to, what we feel, upgrade the position. And now we've had yesterday we talked about the news from Jeremy Fowler and, I think Ian Rappaport, that the relationship was on the mend between the two parties.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's on the mend.
Let's go to cut number three here. Here's Jeremy Fowler saying exactly just that.
I'm told that the player does not have any immediate plans to expand his trade list, which currently includes four teams. So Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson have been in some communication recently. I'm told the momentum has been positive. Look, none of this precludes Seattle from making a potential deal. They only have three draft picks this year, so if they feel like they can rebuild their roster from another team's draft capital and maybe get a quarterback in return, maybe they do that deal. But Seattle and Russell Wilson are in a better place than they were a few weeks ago.
So take a lot of the, you know, stuff that was said in the middle. The last part, they are in a better place. I think that that is important, right? And the question of what is Russ thinking right now, I think that that's it. That, hey, you're in that mindset of, okay, we've made the moves. We're continuing to add. We'll see what happens through the rest of free agency and through the draft. And, you know, we're focused on 2021 and making it the best that we can possibly make it. So I think that's the part in this. But the other thing that really stood out to me in this conversation is seeing the divide or the line in the sand being drawn in this conversation, that you have to be either Pete Carroll, John Schneider on their side and defend them staunchly, or you've got to be on Russell Wilson's side and you've got to defend him staunchly, and you everything that he says and does is right, and he knows more than the organization, and you know, or Russell is just a player and he just needs to, you know, he just needs to be quiet and just do his job. Like, there's this unique divide that I've seen in this conversation that just blows my mind. And then also hearing, you know, on the morning show, you got Danny and Gallant talking about how it's almost like if you believe that Russell Wilson has a voice, or, you know, what he's saying, that he has legitimacy to his comments, that you're almost kind of like a conspiracy theorist in a way. Like, I thought that was pretty unique from that point of view, because why can't we be in the middle on this? Why can't we recognize that there's two sides of this conversation, and that each side has a point to be made, and each side has their flaws that need to be corrected? Like, I don't think you can go into this offensive line conversation, look at what Russ said, and say, nah, he doesn't have a point, because he absolutely does. The facts of looking at what Pete and John have decided to do when it comes to the offensive line, their draft picks, their free agent acquisitions since 2014, it's been awful. And I don't know anybody that could legitimately try to defend what they did or what they have done and say that it's great. But that doesn't mean I want Pete Carroll, John Schneider out of town. They're excellent at what they do. They're one of the best. John's one of the best GMs. Pete Carroll's one of the best head coaches in the NFL. I don't want them going anywhere, right? They do so many great things. And on Russell Wilson's end, him talking about, you know, the changes and the things that need to be made, well, you also had one of the worst second halves of your entire career, and there are things that you need to improve and need to explore and need to correct and be fixed. Like, both things can be true, and why isn't there that meet in the middle, Stacey? That's the part where I don't fully understand that side of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of nuanced, right? And I think that, too, there was a time very much in this kind of thing between Russell Wilson and the organization when it felt like they were at very opposite ends. We said over and over, wow, Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll, two very similar people. The fundamental difference between them is they have a different idea of what your road to winning. And that's a difference that's hard to overcome when you have a quarterback who probably believes that he's got the right answer and a head coach who's been doing it his way for decades and has been successful doing it, right? Like, how do you get either of them to change their minds? They've got some pretty good evidence in their minds that that's how they want to do. So I think that's the way it's been framed, which is probably why it feels like there's a divide. I also think, and we saw this with Deshaun Watson voicing his unhappiness in Houston early on, that I think that it often is the case that when a player voices his dissatisfaction, he's seen as being ungrateful. I think that there's already an undertone whenever a player in any way from the perspective of a fan questions a team, and that includes a head coach and GM who in people's minds, they're the team. It's seen as like a weird betrayal. And so I think that there's a lot of passion in there. There's a lot of passion, a lot of emotion, and fans, you know, all of a sudden are feeling like, oh, Russell Wilson's too Hollywood. Or if you're on the other side, you're thinking, fire Pete Carroll. And you're right. Like, I think neither of those things are the answer, which is exactly how I got. I mean, when I had like that big rant that I went on a couple weeks ago, it was in part from being on the outside, from hearing constantly, hey, this insider is connected to this person, so he's being fed this information. This insider is being connected to this person. And I just remember thinking in the moment, like, I am such an insignificant person in all of this that just looking on the outside, removed from anything, I don't know why it can't be fixed. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know why you can't be in the middle on it and recognize that each side has faults. Like, I am not known to or considered important by any of the parties involved here. Like, John, Pete, Russ, I am not significant enough, and that's fine. But it also allows me to feel kind of removed from it when I look on from the outside looking in, kind of where most fans are sitting now. It's a lot easier to look at that and think, like, well, wait a minute. You've got a really successful head coach, a successful quarterback, like they can figure it out. It feels really disingenuous to point to one person and say that's the problem.
Right. And Christian from the 206, you know, coming in here and saying, look, it's not about the blame game. It's about fixing it and addressing the issue. Right. Couldn't state it better. Right. That's exactly what this is about, is looking at the flaws and the issues. Why haven't you been back to an NFC championship game? Why are you of a list of five or six teams? You're one of only six teams that haven't been back to an NFC championship game since 2015. Like that to me, or sorry, 2014. That to me is an indictment, right? It doesn't mean that the franchise as a whole isn't successful. They've been wildly successful in terms of 10-win seasons, getting to the playoffs on a consistent basis. But when it comes to going after Super Bowl, what can they do to fix? What can they do collectively together to fix the problem, to address some things or flaws that have happened, and how can they move forward and correct those? I think that's the biggest part of the equation and the conversation. So I know that this has taken a life of its own, but I think that when we get to this conversation and Michael Sean Dugar asked that question, Stacey, of what is Russ thinking right now? I think right now it's, you're excited about where things are at in terms of, you know, upgrading the tight end position with Gerald Everett, getting Gabe Jackson in here. You've been able to improve that. And you look at your offensive line, you look at Shane Waldron, you add that part of the equation into it. There's plenty of reason for optimism and optimism that this group can be better moving forward and even be better than last year in the first eight games of the season and carry that through. That's got to be the motivating factor for everybody on that offense. You're Tyler Lockett, you're DK Metcalf, you're Dwayne Brown, you're Damian Lewis, you're Russell Wilson. You want to carry that offensive explosion through what you had in the first 8 weeks all the way through the season. Not just a first half wonder, but you want to be able to do that all the way through. And that's got to be a very motivating factor. And I think that right now they're close to having the pieces together to be able to make it work.
Your chance to enter the Open the Gates contest coming up in less than 15 minutes. Before we get to that, it's time for three questions brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
Three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask. What?
Question number one. Let's head down to Peoria. Taylor Trammell last night clearly listening to the most recent edition of Jake and Stacey.
Oh,
the pitch. Swung on, well hit ball, deep to right field. Maben going back to the track, to the wall, looking up, and goodbye baseball. Taylor Trammell with his second home run of the spring, and both coming against the Chicago Cubs. It's the Mariners 1 and the Cubs nothing on home run number 2 by Taylor Trammell.
Guys, we talked about it a lot yesterday, but did Taylor Trammell win the left field job last night?
I don't know, because you hear Jerry DePoto talk about Kelnick this morning, and he really didn't give any leeway one way or the other, right? And so he's holding this close to his vest, and that's okay. But Taylor Trammell, if you're just talking about consistency, I mean, consistently he has shown up this spring. And watching that swing last night, Curtis and Stacey, I mean, my goodness, that was sweet. So would I be upset, as we talked about yesterday, if Kelnick was put down to the minor league level and Trammell was your starter on opening day? No, because I think Trammell has earned it. Mm-hmm. I absolutely do. He's played outstanding. But I also think that talent-wise, mindset-wise, the moment you bring up Kelnick, you're sending a pretty significant message that I think would hold a lot of weight to Mariners fans and to the players in this organization.
Yeah, maybe it's hearing Jerry DePoto this morning with Danny and Gallon, but I lean toward Trammell getting it. But we'll see. We'll find out shortly.
It's the safest move. It's not the wrong move.
Yeah.
It would definitely be a safe move, and Trammell has earned that.
Question two.
Number two.
Some NFL free agency news within the last couple minutes. Malcolm Butler signing with the Arizona Cardinals.
Chaos.
You've got the perpetrator returning to the scene of the crime.
Yo!
How disappointed are you that of all the teams he could have signed with, Malcolm Butler will face the Seattle Seahawks in Glendale, Arizona, at least once in 2021?
We both have the same sigh. Look, I don't like this at all just because of the history. Now, Malcolm Butler also is a player that when you talk about the Cardinals' defense, this was a good signing for them. It really was. Malcolm Butler with the Tennessee Titans, although that defense was a disaster, Malcolm Butler, I didn't look at his performance as part of the issue, as part of the problem. So they get a good, savvy veteran out there on the field that can make plays. I'm very disappointed that he chose the Arizona Cardinals because that defense continues to keep getting better. And guess what? Your division keeps getting that much tougher.
Yeah, I don't look forward to seeing 200 versions of the same joke when Seattle travels out to Glen. That's what I'm more excited or upset about, is seeing the same joke over and over and over and over. And it's not that it's not one that you can think of and immediately think like, ah, that's clever. It's that you see it over and over. And then that's exactly what's going to happen when they go to play the Cardinals. I just know it. I feel it in my bones.
Number three.
We've talked about both these guys potentially returning to Seattle. So which former Seahawk do you think is more likely to ever come back? Jadeveon Clowney or Richard Sherman?
Richard Sherman. I think it's more likely that Richard Sherman would return than Jadeveon Clowney. Clowney's already out doing visits. He's going to Cleveland. I think that you're going to see some activity still be out there for Clowney, even though he's not going to get the same money that he probably thinks he should get. Richard Sherman, I believe that there's a bigger likelihood that he returned to Seattle. So I'm not saying that the conversations are heating up, and I'm not saying that Sherman is looking at the situation with the Seahawks necessarily and saying, yeah, I want to come home. I want to come to Seattle. I think he's very much still open and watching the market and seeing how everything plays out, and I believe that he's got a few teams that he is eyeing himself. But if it came down to it, he's not going to be opposed to returning to Seattle, and that to me, Stacey, is the biggest difference in that equation. Before, I don't know if I would be able to say that.
Yeah, I think it's also Richard Sherman, but you know your girl has been all aboard the hype train for getting Jadeveon Clowney back.
Yes, you have.
And Curtis. Curtis boarded the hype train,
I did.
On Wednesday.
So do you think it's more likely that...
I think it's more likely Sherman is. I don't think either will. I think it's more likely, if I have to choose, that Sherman does.
But let me ask you
this.
Maybe
that's because Clowney just visited with Cleveland.
Do you think it's more likely that they end up with Clowney than Dunlap?
No, I don't think so.
You don't?
Dunlap seemed to really like it here. Like, he had a whole piece in the Players Tribune about how, like, nice it was to feel wanted. And I don't know how he feels now, having been released.
Yeah, but that was when he got traded for it. It's different when it comes down to money and contract negotiations.
But I don't know. Hearing about Clowney being a little more sought after, he's now the top free agent on a lot of lists. A lot of lists. Greg Rosenthal had him on his top free agents list, and so that's who I'm referencing. But I don't know. I don't see him landing in Seattle. Maybe I'm wrong. Curtis, delete this if he lands with Seattle. Get rid of him forever.
Can't.
Okay. Well, I guess that's fine.
I'll try.
We have your chance to open the gates to T-Mobile Park on opening day. Do not go anywhere. That's coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
It's 30 past the hour, which means it's time for us to open the gates on our phone lines and qualify another listener. Call 206-421-3776 or 866-979-3776 in 1 minute if you're listening on a radio, or 30 seconds if you're listening to the stream. We'll take caller number... Jake, you have to say a number.
Six.
Caller number six, who will be entered to win the grand prize of two tickets to opening day and the right to open the gates to welcome fans back to T-Mobile Park. Your next chance to win comes in 1 hour at 12:30. Again, that number, 206-421-3776 or 866-979-3776. Caller number six. Hi, Mike.
Hello. How are you? What a great intro.
Thanks. Yeah, Mike Salk's here, by the way, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Gosh, where do I even want to start? We got into a big, not debate, but we were talking about the idea that there's kind of been like a line drawn in the sand among Seahawks fans now. Almost like even if Russell Wilson and John and Pete all make good, what if there are still fans that are going to either hate one party or be mad at the other group of fans?
I like that. Yeah. War, well, essentially, is what you mean.
It's
like outright war.
Yeah.
Maybe exactly. Fights at Lumen Field this year between... I don't think so. I think the nice thing about sports is that once the offseason ends, those things tend to go away. I mean, you go back even to, like, Russell's first year, right? The year he had been drafted. And I remember Brock and I doing this whole bit about how they were going to have, like, three separate... Like, when fans came to watch training camp, they should be asked which part of the berm they wanted to sit on. The Russell section, the Matt Flynn section, or the Tavares section. And like, okay, who are you? Who do you think it should be? And put people in their various spots.
Yeah, we feel like we're at that point right now, which is interesting.
It feels that way.
Any conversation that gets brought up, it immediately gets to that point.
Yeah, that's what Mark Rogers wants you to do, Jake. Don't fall victim to Mark's big plan. Just he's the outside influence trying to break things up and make things worse. Just don't fall victim to what Mark wants from you. It's okay. It's okay to like both Pete and Russell. It's okay to like John and Pete and Russell. You know what it's called? Being a Seahawks fan.
Yes.
It's just called being a fan of your team and wanting what's best for them. You don't have to choose sides. It's okay.
Yeah, but I feel like there's no room for a nuanced conversation. It immediately becomes, I'm telling you, the second that I say something like, I don't know, I mean, Russ has struggled to play behind great protection, people are like, oh, what's happening to you?
You've
are
changed
you shelling
sides.
Out for Russell Wilson? And I'm like, no. I mean, John and Pete have been fantastic. I mean, you know, I think John's had, some misses in the draft, but then he really struck gold on a couple other guys. And it's like, oh, what do you want, John to be fired? And
right.
Like, no.
We do live in a world, obviously, where you know, it's easy to exaggerate and push people to the polarized extremes. And there is some of that, like, that makes sense here. There is an element of trying to determine who's responsible for what. But the reason, I think that's what we always try to come back to, is remember, why is it that you're trying to determine who's responsible for what? So that you can get it fixed. So that you can bring out what people's best, so that you can ultimately win Super Bowls. And everybody
right.
has that same goal. Now, maybe they're going about it with different philosophy, different ways of attacking it. But the goal for everybody should be, how do the Seahawks get themselves back to winning a Super Bowl? And it looks like, you know, they're going to get to face Super Bowl, you know, nemesis Malcolm Butler twice a year now, including once in the stadium in which he did his nasty deeds.
Yeah,
so,
don't like that.
I don't like that at all.
I don't like it.
I saw that this morning. I was like, oh, I don't like that.
Right.
The part, I don't like that at all.
The part that gets me.
That made me more like J.J. Watt. Whatever. They'll handle J.J. Watt. Get Malcolm Butler out of the NFC West. Go away.
It just feels like that always happens within this division, though. That there's always some backstory with every single signing.
I feel like it's always the Cardinals. Maybe that's just me. But
they try and do everything they can to get under Seahawks skin. I firmly believe that. That had nothing to do with the actual talent level of Malcolm Butler and how he can improve the team.
They spent $6 million to tick off the Seahawks. Come on.
Yes. It was all worth it. That's $6 million. It was worth it.
Well, I'm mad. I don't know if the Seahawks are, but
exactly.
I am. Like, they got me. Maybe that was worth it.
They got every Seahawks fan getting in their feelings today, and that is well worth it. But, you know, one of the parts of the conversation, you know, in regards to how this got sparked up is Michael Sean Dugard sent out a tweet yesterday talking about how the Seahawks pretty much brought back, you know, 80% of their offensive line, right? So there hasn't really been, just face value, a tremendous amount of change on the offensive line after there's been conversation. He just asked the simple question of, how do you think Russell feels right now, right? And my answer was, this has got to be a TBD conversation. This has got to be to be determined. As of right now, I think things are fine. I think things are good. You're excited about Gabe Jackson and what he can bring to the table. Ethan Posick might be able to have a better year.
And
they're
not done yet.
Exactly.
I mean, like, well, let's wait and see what happens. First of all the positions, the ones that tend to get cut and move around a little bit in training camp or after training camp are offensive and defensive linemen. Especially interior defensive
and
linemen.
Ethan's contract is not massive.
No, if he's not the guy, you just move on from that. And if they're able to upgrade at that spot, fine. You know, I think upgrading the left guard spot was a huge key for them, right? And being able now to have two guards that you're comfortable with, you're already happy with your left tackle. The center is not nearly as important in today's NFL, at least as far as I can tell, and listening to people who know more than I do. So you're really now talking about one position, your right tackle? okay, well, you know, maybe it ends up being Shell. Maybe you're able to get better at that spot. But if you're only talking about one position on your offensive line where you're really worried and feel like you need some level of upgrade, all right, well, Russ should be happy. He should feel like they are well on their way. And, oh, by the way, you bring in another tight end who is a pretty darn good blocker and can be a weapon for him and has been in the system with the new offensive coordinator. So, yeah, if I'm Russ, I'm feeling pretty darn happy right now.
If you had to bet right now whether or not John Schneider leaves the draft with three picks, would you?
I would not bet that, no.
Okay.
I would say he ends up with more than three picks.
I don't know how he's going to get it, but it feels impossible that he'll stay there.
Yeah, he's twitchy right
exactly.
now.
Exactly. He's going to be like, give me five seventh rounders. Yeah. And they're going to be like, John, no.
This kid, what we were thinking is that it probably so desperate at this point, there's been teams as of late that have been penalized with draft picks for their lack of COVID protocols that they're probably going to the NFL and saying, hey. Hello.
Yeah, we've been good.
Yeah, we were actually the poster child. Can we get a gold star?
Can we get a seventh rounder or something?
Come on, give me something.
Yeah, just give us something here. We need it.
I mean, if the opposite's going to be true. He is Mike Salk, joins us every weekday at 11:30. Thanks, Mike.
Sure.
Quickly, we're going to bring on our caller. We have a winner here entering into the Open the Gates contest. You are officially entered into the contest. It is Trevor in Spanaway. Trevor, tell us why you deserve these tickets and a chance to open the gates and welcome fans into T-Mobile Park.
Jake, Stacey, I'm so pumped about this because when I first heard about your guys' contest, it took me back to a memory of when 2001, when they first built the stadium, my great-grandpa and I were actually one of the first people to go in and, like, view the stadium inside before even the Mariners got to play a game there. So it brought back some very happy memories for me, and, you know, I'm hoping that he's looking down with this opportunity in front of his grandson and keeping me in his thoughts, you know.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, Trevor.
We might have had a walk-off. We might have had a walk-off here, Trevor.
Trevor knows that, like, he can't guilt you into
I know,
into
but I'm feeling it
tickets,
already.
Right?
First there was Ivor, now there's Trevor. Okay.
Absolutely.
I'm like, buying my own tickets on
Trevor,
the side.
Trevor, I just want you
it's
to know.
It's still a random drawing.
Trevor,
I know,
want you to know
bad.
That I have nothing to do with how they pick these things, and however they do it, they're monsters, okay? You,
Jake, I completely understand.
Trevor, thank you for calling in. You
Thanks
are officially
call,
entered. Have a good one, all right? Good
Congratulations.
Luck.
Yeah, no, thank you, guys. Have a good one.
All right, there's some no good, very bad news happening on Montlake with men's hoops, and according to a report that broke yesterday, it could be getting a lot worse. How can the Dogs dig themselves out? That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Guys, in the last 2 days, we've seen Eric Stevenson and Marcus Sohonis enter the transfer portal. And then in a piece published just yesterday, Seattle Times reporter Percy Allen said that according to UW sources, the Huskies could lose four more players in what's expected to be a turbulent offseason, end quote. And then he says, in addition to Cameron Dollar, who his announcement of leaving the program was on March 17th, now Allen says, and David Rice's future could still be in the air. It remains uncertain. So if all of this happens, you have the departure of six players and two assistants in a single offseason. For Washington men's hoops. And that's bad news, Bears.
Oh, that's the bad news.
It's the baddest news. I mean, I didn't think it could get much worse than like where they had fallen to in the 2 years since they were like tops in their conference.
They made it to the second round of the NCAA tournament.
They were number one in the Pac-12 and went all the way to 12. And then, congrats, up to 11. But you were still... Percy highlights a stat where he says, the Dogs are 9-29 in Pac-12 play over the last 2 years.
It feels like it.
9-29.
It definitely feels like it.
What about that?
It sounds
feels
about
good.
Right. That doesn't like
you might as well
surprise.
Be 0. 9-29.
I mean, it is getting to a point where I don't know if you could wait. You know, Curtis, you were talking about maybe there's a head coaching candidate that they might be, you know, waiting for to come out of the tournament before they make their move. I don't know if you can wait. And you know what? Like, I don't buy the idea because someone threw this out there. It's like, well, what if Mike Hopkins is making a statement? He's clearing house and he's making a statement that I don't think so because who do you have in the wings?
Oh, he made a statement.
Who do you have in the wings that's going to replace all these players that are going to eventually leave your program and these assistant coaches that are leaving your program? this program is a nothing burger right now, and it's continuing to get worse, and there's no way to fix it. There's no path to being to fixing this right now. And I think that you take an example of, you know, some of the players that came in. We were talking about the kid that transferred in from, he's a local kid, came in and went to Wichita State.
Yeah, Eric Stevenson.
Eric Stevenson comes in, and after 1 year is like, yeah, no, thanks, but no thanks. And then you get you get Marcus Sahonis, who, look, is he a frontline player, and he's going to be, you know, all Pac-12, and was he all Pac-12 this last year? No, he wasn't, but he's the type of player that you want to continue to keep having in your program because he could develop into somebody like that his junior and senior year, and when he taps out after his sophomore year and says, no, I'm good, and he's your second leading scorer, like that's a problem.
It absolutely is, and it kind of reminds me of near the end of Lorenzo Romar's tenure when you saw somebody like Nigel Williams-Goss transfer to Gonzaga, and it's like, holy cow, like this guy was a McDonald's All-American, he commits to UW, there's so many high hopes for him, and then he's out. And then it's just like a domino effect of all these other guys leaving. Percy Allen mentions four other guys expected to leave at some point in this offseason, and Dave Rice, the assistant coach on that team, his son is also on the roster. Mm-hmm. So if he leaves, which Dave Rice's name is mentioned in that article by Percy Allen, I would imagine Dave Rice's son is also going to be out of the program, which
probably
no idea if he's part of that four player group, but I mean, this is a huge wave of players being lost on a roster that's only 15 deep.
Well, and the reason it feels like a no good, very bad problem isn't just all of this turnover that's going to be happening, but also that Mike Hopkins would appear to be back next year. He's got a $12 million amount remaining on his contract, which is a really pricey buyout. So, I don't know. But Jen Cohen has seemed to throw her support behind him. I don't know.
Well,
that
he was
she
her
has,
hire.
Yeah, I don't know that she's like, the only thing she said was she would evaluate it after the season, which it's obviously, I mean, the tourney's still going on, but I mean,
yeah, but
this
is getting to a point where this has to be addressed tomorrow. Like, this has to be addressed sooner rather than later, because guess what? You're continuing to lose out on recruits. You're continuing to have a basketball program that is an embarrassment right now to your university. And to me, if you're looking at a $12 million buyout, that's a lot of money. And I know that boosters don't want to pay that kind of money for just a simple buyout. But that tells me if you're not willing to do that, that gives me a cause for major concern if I'm a Husky fan. That the status of my university, the status of the strength of my booster club, and the desire to win and the importance to win now is not at the forefront of the mind of my university and the booster club. Like, that's a problem. That's a big time problem. Because, you know, the other frustrating part about this, and Curtis, I know that this is something that really drives you crazy, is that this UW basketball program has been so up and down over the years, and it shouldn't be that way. Like, it's maddening, because if you could plop a university and have a basketball program in any place in the country, Seattle might be one of the greatest places because of the amazing tradition of producing great basketball players in this city, in the surrounding area, in Washington. This is a hotbed for talent in this area. How are you not better?
Yeah, you're not going to find a more fertile recruiting ground, pound for pound, out there in the country. I mean, yeah, in L.A. and New York and all those places, just because of how big the population is, but just based off of the talent that comes from Seattle so routinely, I mean, there's no excuse for the Huskies to be a bottom to mid-tier Pac-12 school. Heck, you could say the Huskies right now aren't even a top three program in their own state. You've got Gonzaga making the tournament. Eastern Washington made the tournament. They gave Kansas a nice fight.
Right.
Cougs women's made the tournament. Shout out to the women's Cougs.
Well, and the men's program at Washington State has surpassed UW right now. The Huskies, at this current junction, are worse off than the Cougs were under Ernie Kent.
So what's... I
don't like
facts
it,
are facts.
I know, and I don't like it. Well, okay, so we have about...
So what's the solution?
I was going to say, we have 2 minutes left, and this is a much longer conversation, but we've got to get to Rick. And so here's my question for you guys. Does it start with recruiting? Because part of the problem for Hopkins is it feels like the personnel you had, the guys you had, you can never quite get what you wanted to do to work for those guys. And when you tried to adjust, other teams adapted, right? So, like, if you're looking at a new influx of talent, and I don't know that's going to happen this year, is recruiting where it starts?
It's got to, but I think a lot of people are scared by the one-and-done guys. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't recruit those players. You should build a core group of players that you can develop from their freshman year through their senior year. And in addition to that core group, bring in these guys who are going to be here for 1 or 2 years and really, you know, blow the lid off of what this program can be.
Exactly.
Duke does recruit the one-and-done guys, obviously. But they also have guys that stay for 3 or 4 years within that program, and that's why they're consistently among the best programs in the country. Yeah, they didn't make the tournament this year, but to, you know, other programs as well. Jake's Jayhawks, the Kansas, same thing. Kentucky, these are programs that do it this way, and you've got five-star guys coming out of this area. Paolo Banchero going to Duke next year. He's from O'Day. Shane Noel, brother
and
of...
And had ties to UW.
Yeah.
Family.
Shane Noel,
legacy.
Brother of Jalen Noel, former Pac-12 player of the year for your Washington Huskies.
Go Dawgs.
Is going to University of Arizona, a rival in your conference. You could not keep the brother. Yeah, bear down. Go Cats every day. You couldn't keep the brother of one of your best players, of one of Mike Hopkins' best players. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's brutal. So what's the solution? To me, first things first, you've got to address and get the dying root out of your program, which unfortunately is Mike Hopkins. They need new blood in the program. They need a new sense of direction. They need a new recruiting pitch out there. And the other thing, I'll go a little radical on this one because I know that this is a major leap of faith given the lack of background and everything else, but Brandon Roy makes a lot of sense in this town. Brandon Roy, to me, makes a ton of sense for taking over the head coaching position. I either want Brandon Roy or I want a drill sergeant type of personality at the head coach. We've had two player coach personalities here at UW, Romar and Mike Hopkins, and I think that having a different approach, watching college basketball, the best college basketball coaches that are out there in the country, they're not necessarily the nicest guys out there, right? I mean, they just simply aren't. And so for me, I think that Brandon Roy would be a guy that in this area is plugged in, dialed in, has a tremendous amount of respect in this town, in this city with recruits. You'd automatically have a plugged in recruiter, and you would also, I think, you would reinvigorate your fan base and excitement for this program that right now I just can't even believe that they are here at this point in time as a basketball program. I would be very, very embarrassed right now as a Husky basketball fan because they should be so much better.
We still have What I Need to Know coming up at 12:45 this time instead of 1:45 again because we got that Mariners game coming up live on 710 ESPN Seattle. I already have a question for it where someone says, Curtis, why do the Wildcats say bear down when they are cats? Do not answer yet.
Oh,
that's coming up in What I Need to Know. All right. Also, we're taking you around the diamond thanks to the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners and Nick Margavish's take on the Oakland A's immediately following us today at 1 p.m. Jared Kelnick and Julio Rodriguez are both in Seattle's starting lineup. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Opening day officially a week from today, and the voice of the Mariners, Rick Riz, joins us next to tell us exactly what he's watching for.